Fanning on 2FM.
For the past 60 years, we've been told that the best possible diet involves cutting back on fat, especially saturated fat. But what if the low-fat diet is itself the problem? What if the very foods we've been denying ourselves, the creamy cheeses and the sizzling steaks, are the key to reversing the epidemics of obesity, diabetes and heart disease? So begins the blurb on the back of a new book called The Big Fat Surprise, which details a 9-year investigation into the whole subject of fat and saturated fat in particular, and the possibility that it's been wrongly vilified for the past 6 decades. We've been told, of course, for so long that fat is bad, and those of us who are conscious about our health generally follow a high-grain, low-fat diet, so it's not going to be easy to convince us otherwise. However, Nina Teicholz, the author of The Big Fat Surprise, makes a very good argument for it, and she joins me now. Nina, you're very welcome to the programme. First of all, what prompted you to write this book? I mean, it's fairly sizable. You've been putting an awful lot of work into this project.
Yes, it does seem like a crazy undertaking to have spent so many years investigating this topic. But of course, it's central to everybody's health. And I embarked on it because, well, for two reasons. One is I wrote a groundbreaking article for a magazine on trans fats, which are, you know, have recently come into the news. And that just opened up this whole world of dietary fats. And I started talking to people, really, who had been sidelined, academics who revealed to me this potential story that all of our knowledge, supposed knowledge about dietary fats of all kinds, all fats had been wrong. And this was just a huge story. It seemed inconceivable to me. I myself was a vegetarian at the time, eating mainly grains and a little bit of chicken and fish, a lot of vegetables and fruit. And but also around the same time, I was doing a little restaurant review column as a sort of just a little side gig. We didn't have the money to pay for restaurant meals, so I just had to eat whatever the chef decided to send out to me. That turned out not to be stir-fried vegetables and chicken breasts, which is what I had been used to eating. Instead, red meat, foie gras, pâté, creamy sauces, creamy cheeses, all these things I had rarely, if ever, eaten in my adult life. And I found that they were rich, textured, earthy, delicious. I found that I lost this stubborn 10 pounds I had been fighting for years. And the next time that I went to my doctor for a checkup, he said my cholesterol levels looked absolutely fine. So that presented this huge mystery, which took me 9 years to really get to the bottom of.
First of all, I presume you found all this stuff very satisfying to eat. I mean, these rich dishes, the revelation to you, all the rest of it, etc. But I mean, obviously you probably would. You ate with abandon, you found yourself losing weight. Hold on a second, I'll repeat that. You ate with abandon, but you found yourself losing weight. I mean, like, sorry, were you unique? Is that the point, Nina?
Well, luckily, no, because, you know, what at the end of this investigation, what I came to understand was that our dietary wisdom of the past 50 years that has labeled fat bad for health, that it causes cancer, heart disease, obesity, and especially that saturated fat, the kind found in meat, cheese, dairy, butter, eggs, that those are bad foods, I found quite the reverse. That those foods and fat as a particular part of those foods was extremely important for health. And then, in fact, in the last decade, there have been a lot of clinical trials now done, dozens on thousands of people, comparing a low-fat diet, the one we've all been following for decades, to one that is high in fat and low in carbohydrates. And what those trials have conclusively demonstrated is that populations of people, large populations of people, look better on a high-fat, low-carbohydrate diet. They lose more weight, and their risk factors for heart disease and diabetes improve. So that is really an extraordinary result. And that has just been now confirmed over and over and over. That's why we're increasingly seeing more and more headlines of scientists reckoning with this data.
So let's first of all explain about fat itself, saturated fats in particular. How do they get such a bad name? You're saying you can actually point it back to one bad bogeyman himself, which is a guy called Ansel Keys. Is that right?
That is right. So in the 1950s is when this whole story really begins, which is when the United States and other nations as well were in a panic about the rising tide of heart disease that had come from really out of nowhere in the early 1900s to be the number one killer. In our country, President Eisenhower himself had a heart attack, was out of the Oval Office for 10 days in 1955. And there were a number of ideas about what might be causing heart disease. There was one scientist, Ansel Keys, a pathologist from the University of Minnesota, that proposed that it was saturated fats. Saturated fats would raise your total cholesterol, clog your arteries, and cause a heart attack. That was called the diet heart hypothesis. And Ansel Keys was this outsized personality, very aggressive, quite bold, and very convincing. He was able to get his idea implanted into the American Heart Association. So the very first anti-saturated fat guidelines in the entire world were issued by the American Heart Association in 1961. And from there, that's what set this whole ball rolling. The United States government then adopted these guidelines in 1978. Other countries followed from there. And the whole world adopted this idea that saturated fat in particular, and later it came to impugn all fats, that all fats were bad for you. That idea really rolled out across the Western world. And it's really a quite unbelievable story. I mean, the history and the politics and the institutions, the combination of institutions that invested in this hypothesis to the point that there was no turning back, the weakness of the science that was used to support those recommendations, the influence of the food industry from the very beginning. These are intertwining forces that kept this hypothesis alive for so many decades.
So in other words, researchers were desperate for answers. They decided that this guy, Ansel Keys, knew what he was talking about, the scientist at the University of Minnesota, and because of their desperation, they went with this. And then suddenly everybody went with it. You're saying this is just not true because he violated several basic scientific norms in his study.
Right. So the science underpinning those initial 1961 American Heart Association recommendations was, the science was very weak, and it amounted mainly to one large study that Ansel Keys himself had done. It was called the Seven Country Study. I go into that in a lot of detail because it was such an important study. It's like the big bang of nutrition studies. He sampled nearly 13,000 men in seven countries, mainly Europe, also the U.S. and Japan. But it turns out that—and he found what he thought he would find going into the study, which was a correlation between saturated fat consumption and your risk for having a heart attack. But it turns out there were just a number of enormous methodological flaws with his study, starting, for one, that he only chose countries that he knew would confirm his hypothesis. So he chose Italy and Greece, countries that he knew ate very little saturated fat, mainly because they were living in post-World War II recovery, and they suffered low rates of heart disease. And he ignored other countries that would have disproven his thesis, like France, West Germany, Switzerland, also had very low rates of heart disease post-World War II, but ate a lot more saturated fat. So that was one problem. Another problem was he took three dietary surveys, and one of them he performed during Lent in Greece. Lent, when people were conscientiously avoiding animal foods as part of their religious faith. So that clearly distorted the kinds of dietary samples he took. And he, you know, in the end, he only took dietary samples from a tiny, unscientifically significant sample of those people. Only a few hundred people did he actually take dietary samples from amongst the 13,000 that were in his study. So there were so many problems with that study. But it was a big data point at a time when nutrition science had very few studies in the field, and he was able to push that study through at a time when there was such a sense, as you say, of public health urgency. This was a tremendous problem that was affecting all of the leaders of the country. And there were people, critics, all along saying, no, the science is not good enough. We have to wait. We have to do more studies. But the far more powerful and ultimately persuasive voices said, no, we must give advice now. The problem is too urgent. And what we could not imagine that there could be unintended consequences, which, of course, now we are all suffering 50 years later. But at the time, we couldn't imagine.
That means that this guy's work was the Bible. If it's no longer the Bible and enough people like yourself have debunked it, has it been proven at all that saturated fat could lead to heart disease?
No. In short, there were a number of studies that followed up upon Ansel Keys' seven-country study. Of course, there were more studies. There were a number of clinical trials that were done in the 1970s. They were also, this was the beginning of the field of nutrition science generally, and they did not conclusively show that denying oneself saturated fats and replacing them with vegetable oil diets, that those, they did not show that life could be extended by doing that. And there were many methodological problems with those studies as well. A couple of them didn't control for smoking, for instance, or they allowed people to wander in and out of their studies. I think it's important to note that, you know, I have gone back through all these studies and analyzed them and critiqued them, as have other journalists mainly. But More importantly, in the last 5 years, there have been two what's called meta-analyses, which are large attempts to look at all the evidence and say, you know, what do they show, what do they not show? There have been two separate groups of scientists who have looked at all the data on saturated fats, two separate meta-analyses done by top scientists, including the one in March of this year with researchers from Cambridge and Harvard. Both those meta-analyses have concluded that the evidence cannot be said to show that saturated fats cause heart disease.
Well, then let's see what we can get with that reversal, that saturated fat does not cause heart disease, and that's the journals, the Annals of Internal Medicine from 2014. Now, we probably should distinguish, by the way, at this point, that by a high-fat diet, you don't mean eating loads of junk food and stuff like chocolate. You mean foods like red meat, eggs, dairy produce, stuff like that. You know, those that are high in protein as well as fat.
Right. Well, whole foods, you know, meat, cheese, butter, dairy, eggs, cream, those foods. And, you know, it turns out that the healthiest diets in these clinical trials that have been done over the past decade, that the diet is actually, it's not really a high protein diet. It's kind of moderate protein, but really high in fat, you know, over 50, 60% fat. And importantly, it restricts carbohydrates. Those diets have been shown to be the most effective in helping people to lose weight and also to fight diabetes and heart disease. I just think it's important to note that there's a tremendous range in the kinds of diets that people will tolerate and that people need. So, you know, if you're somebody who has no problem with your weight, you have no risk factors, you can, you know, there's a much greater range of things that you can eat. You have a healthy metabolism. But if you are somebody who is fighting with obesity, diabetes, heart disease, it means that your metabolism has tipped over into an unhealthy range where basically you are intolerant of carbohydrates. And the only way, or the best way that has been supported by the science of reversing that, of tipping your metabolism back, is by restricting carbohydrates. And the more obese, the more diabetic, the sicker you are, the more drastic those that kind of carbohydrate restriction needs to be in order to heal. Yeah.
Well, then, going by what you're saying, would it be fair to say that, for instance, the Atkins diet, which was a fad for a while, is actually an ideal diet to follow?
Well, I mean, basically, the answer is yes. And I talk about Atkins in my book. He's a really fascinating personality because he became popular in the early 1970s with his best-selling diet books. But of course, in those days, you know, there were no scientific studies to back him up. He could only point to his thousands of patient records, which are not science. They're just anecdotal. And he also landed at a time when, you know, the low-fat diet was becoming more and more popular. So he was this loathed, reviled person in the medical and nutrition establishment. I mean, he is to this day called by our officials in this country called a fad, dangerous diet. And he really lost that debate. But his book sold millions and millions because, his diet clearly worked. And now, actually, there were researchers who went back and looked through his files and said, you know what, we need to do the science to see if this diet actually works. And that science has now been done.
Well, then, all those trials have basically shown, is what you're saying, that a high-fat, low-carbohydrate diet performs far better than a low-fat diet when it comes to tackling diabetes and obesity and heart disease, etc. So what about the Mediterranean one, by the way, which I'm sure you would have been into maybe 12, 13 years ago, whatever, or even more? Like, you know, you know, it's often held up as the ideal diet. Where does that fit in with all of this, Atkins and otherwise?
Oh, it's a great question. And there's a whole chapter in my book on the Mediterranean diet, which is a completely fascinating untold story. But, you know, that diet was introduced as kind of a Western medical concept in 1993 by Harvard researchers. And at that time, it was really welcomed because we were all at the height of the non-fat 1980s, and people had been struggling along trying to, you know, spray their pans with spray fat, minimizing their fat. And here came the Mediterranean diet was like a savior, because here finally was a healthy fat, olive oil, that we could use in abundance. As the Harvard researcher who introduced it said, it's like the food pyramid with olive oil poured all over it. So finally, here was a healthy fat that people could use. The studies have been conducted on the Mediterranean do show that that diet is superior to a low-fat diet. That's the comparison that has been made. But there are plenty of other traditional high-fat diets that may be equally healthy. The point is, what might be healthy about the Mediterranean diet is simply that it's higher in fat than the low-fat diet.
Okay, well then, if fat isn't the issue, then, when it comes to things like obesity and heart disease, what is?
Well, so when we were told to take off our plates meat, cheese, butter, dairy, eggs, which had been the mainstay meals for thousands of years, what replaced them? Potatoes, pasta, rice, You know, a lot of that's, you know, we've been told to eat 50-60% of our diet as carbohydrates, and we have largely done that. We have largely ramped up our carbohydrate intake, and I know in the UK, saturated fat consumption has dropped by nearly a half over the last 30 years. So carbohydrates, it turns out, I think that they may be fine in moderation, but we are eating a spectacular, we've really shifted quite a large amount of our calories over to them. And glucose, which is how in carbohydrates like a potato in your blood will turn into glucose. Glucose triggers the release of insulin. Insulin is like the king of all hormones for socking away fat. It does this particularly well in combination with fructose in fruit. And, you know, most table sugar is half glucose, half fructose. So this insulin has a fattening effect. And there is also, it also seems to, fructose and glucose together seem to have these harmful metabolic effects of making your good cholesterol, your HDL go down, your triglycerides go up, your inflammatory markers increase. So carbohydrates leads to all of these symptoms that altogether are kind of, or are called metabolic syndrome, but obesity, diabetes, heart disease are all implicated in the effects that carbohydrates produce. I mean, I should just say, as an aside, we've also ramped up in getting rid of saturated fats in animal foods. We've eaten a lot more unsaturated fats, which are vegetable oils, safflower, sunflower, peanut, soybean. And there are all kinds of worrisome effects of having too much of those fats in our diet, which we have increased enormously too over the last century.
So therefore, what you've found is the fat doesn't make you fat. Carbohydrates do.
I think the best evidence points in that direction, yes.
Well, then, if there is, let's just say in the scientific world, if there is scientific proof there, if the results seem to indicate a high-fat diet works better than, you know, than anything else, then why aren't we all eating a high-fat diet? I mean, why aren't our state organisations, our health services telling us to follow that kind of a diet now? I mean, don't tell me, it's big business to blame, the giant food companies still want to sell us their sugary and low-fat products, is that it?
I have to say that I think the mistakes that were made are really have been of science, not so much the food industry. The food industry really has responded to what the dietary guidelines have been. And, you know, the mistakes were from that, you know, that the seven country study on down. And again, we're in three generations now where institutions are invested in this hypothesis. Professional societies are invested in it. Scientists have been schooled in it. And their entire, you know, their whole careers have been built upon this hypothesis. It's so hard to reverse out of that. I mean, the food companies, they actually, ironically, they would benefit from saturated fat being less loathed, because in order to make products that will last on shelves for long periods of time, that have long shelf life and don't go bad, you need saturated fat for that. Saturated fat is solid and stable. It lasts for a long period of time. Oils don't do that. So the food industry suffers from not being able to use saturated fat from their products. So, you know, I'm not saying that they haven't had a role to play, but I think ultimately the mistakes that have been made are ones of science, and it's very hard for scientists to reverse themselves. I mean, right now in the United States, we're going through the process where our expert panel is revising our dietary guidelines. They will not even acknowledge the research that has been going on showing, you know, there's now been 24 trials on thousands of people showing that a high-fat, low-carbohydrate diet is healthier than a low-fat one. And the people in control of that expert committee will not look at that work.
Well then, the half century
effort. It's stunning.
So the 50-year effort, like to cut back on the consumption of meat and eggs and whole fat dairy, has had a tragic quality and continues to have it by the sound of things. So in conclusion then, after 9 years of research and this detailed eye-opener of a book, you truly believe that a higher fat diet is healthier than one low in fat but high in carbs, that saturated fats are actually good for us?
I do. I think that that is what the science definitively shows. I think it's just unavoidable now to reach that conclusion. You know, recently I came across a study that was sent to me by an Irish doctor about how in the late 1970s, the Irish dairy farmers were living and they were eating nothing but dairy products and lard, and some of the longest lived people in the world. You know, we only hear about the famous Japanese Okinawans eating rice and vegetables, right, but there are plenty of other data points out there, including your own ancestors. So I really think that's where the science, I think it just definitively shows that now.
Okay, well, this one will run and run. The fascinating stuff. The big fat surprise is what we're talking about. And thank you very much, Nina Teicholz, for being with us here on the programme this morning. Thank you, Nina.
Thank you so much for having me.